From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour was made yesterday when, as you just heard, Rochester Mayor Malik Evans delivered his State of the City address. The mayor offered perhaps the most optimistic assessment of the city of Rochester I've yet heard, both the present and the future. He touted growing employment, increased generational wealth, strides in public safety. Crime is down almost everywhere across this country compared to 2021. Murders are down nationwide to a lower level than 2019. But what should a realistic target look like for a city like Rochester? We're going to talk about crime and public safety with the mayor. We'll talk about city taxes, business development, assessments. We'll talk about support for low-income households through programs like GBI and perhaps other initiatives. Always glad to welcome the mayor of Rochester, Malik Evans, back to Connections. Mr. Mayor, thank you for being here.
Good to be with you.
Do you think that was the most optimistic assessment that you've given yet of Rochester yesterday?
That I've given? Well, I think that there's plenty of mayors that usually give optimistic assessments. I think that's the job of a leader, to be an internal optimist, and that's what I am. But I think that what I did last night was not only give an optimistic assessment, but backed it up with evidence. I think that is one thing to give an assessment, but if you don't have programs that show that you are making progress, then it's just a talk. And we do a lot of that in communities across the country where we identify problems and we get so wrapped up in the problems but not offering solutions. So I think that what you saw last night was I reiterated the promises that we made and how we are working to keep those promises. But I am an eternal optimist, Evan. That's just me. I always see the grass as half full. One of the things that we talked about last night was look at these things and see how they are happening, because it's important to remind people where we were, more importantly, and where we are, but more importantly, where we're going. And I think you have to do more. As I always say, we have a past to remember, a present to live, and a future to build. And in order to build that strong future, you have to look at where you were and then where we are right now in the present. And I think that's what we looked at. I mean, yes, public safety is our number one priority. So, yes, violence and crime is down across the country. But I always say that we don't want to pat ourselves on the back so hard that our arms hurt, because if you have five homicides and you meet a family of someone who passed away, it's not going to matter to them that shootings are down 31%, which they are. Homicides fell by 32%, which they did. And firearm-related deaths are down 29%. But it's still important to put that out there, because people need to see that we are trending in the right direction, and that's important. I also always mention the 800 guns that were taken off the street last year to let people know what we are dealing with. 20 years ago, there would have never been 800 guns taken off the street, but it shows the level of firepower that people are walking around with. And these guns that were taken off the streets are illegal firearms. These aren't registered firearms. So it's important to talk about public safety and the success that you're making. But when you're also talking about public safety, you also have to talk about economic security and economic safety. And that is what we also focused on a lot last night as well. How the Office of Violence Prevention Services, which I put in forth, which is one of the first in the country, how we were innovative in that space, and how through the Rochester Peace Collective, we launched a program that got thousands of residents into job training programs, because we believe that if people are involved in job training programs, that is the best violence reduction strategy. Economic empowerment and public safety go hand in hand, like a baby and pacifier, like love and marriage. They are connected. So you have to have economic security if you're going to have long-time public safety. So we try to make that case, and from what I heard from people, I think they are understanding why that was important and how we made that case last night.
We're going to go over point by point. Before I do, that first question I asked probably sounded like a softball. Here, I'm going to defend it, Mr. Mayor. I'm not asking you if it was optimistic just to kind of give you a softball. You strike me as someone who gets annoyed at undue pessimism. Not to say that you want relentless, unrealistic optimism, but you're not on social media. You don't live your life on Twitter or Facebook. I never see you there. In fact, you and I talked years ago before you were mayor about your disdain for social media. A lot of politicians in this city and elsewhere are on social quite often. You just strike me as a little bit of a different in that way, and you seem to me to be kind of annoyed when people are unduly pessimistic. Is that fair?
I am, because I think that we're great at identifying problems. And what I find is that some of the people who talk the loudest, they do the least. You ask them, what have you proposed or accomplished? And 9 times out of 10, it is zip, zilda, zero, nada. So when somebody asks me, and you know, they say, oh, housing's bad. Okay, what's been your proposal around housing? Well, I know what mine was, and I know what I did in the last 2 years. I know that there's been a total investment in the last 2 years of $685 million, right? I know that we have numerous affordable housing projects and market rate housing projects that we have put forth. But I don't just think it's a Rochester thing. I think it's a national issue in which seriousness of elected officials have now become almost like Carnival Barker sideshows, where we no longer solve serious problems because people may have missed things when they were children. I don't know what it is, but they need that attention. And that attention is not garnering the results that we need. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm on Instagram. I'm on social media. I love LinkedIn. I live there. But I'm so busy working that I don't have time to post every single thing I'm thinking about, or without having the proper information before I go off half-cock. So I think that is one of the things that annoys me a little bit, because I think that you also can get ahead of having actual facts, and then you're so interested in getting it out there that it happens that way. But the media, I think, stations like XXI and NPR, I don't think, fall into this category. But a lot of the media has become so unserious where you can't even have a conversation like we're having now over an hour time frame, because they're reacting to a person that tweeted something that that got attention that might not even be fact-based or even solution-oriented. So you are right. You definitely sized that up well, that I do have a very short fuse for just the lack of seriousness that we've been seeing in politics over the last 20 years, and that's just not locally. That I think that's just our national conversation. We probably could do a whole show just on that.
Well, let's start with housing here. And you mentioned housing this year. The city of Rochester conducted its property assessment that happens every 4 years. This time around, as we know, a record increase in average assessed value of 68%. Every neighborhood in the city saw increases. Beachwood area basically doubled on average. And four members of city council have argued for a pause. They said the assessment is, we should stop it because a lot of people have said they're unhappy with it or they're concerned about their taxes. And I'm very curious if you want to describe your thoughts on whether it should be stopped or even considered.
Well, you can't stop an assessment, right? You can't stop it. It's already happened. And one thing I'll make the point is that the first off, I've made clear that I am proposing a tax rate cut this year. So if we did not do an assessment, we would not have a tax rate cut. And, you know, one of the things I always make sure I do is that I talk to regular everyday citizens. I think people forget sometimes that I do this regularly. And my staff can tell you probably about 75% of my time is spent at least on a day talking to just a regular citizen. Right. I do mayor on the block. I do so many other things. There is this conception that when you talk about assessments, that increased assessment means that you're going to get higher taxes, which we know is not the case. There are many people in this community, particularly in old traditional red line neighborhoods in the northeast and southwest of the city, northeast and southwest of the city, who have not seen their property values go up in years. Okay? And usually when you buy a home, you want to see your property values go up in value. If they go down in value, that is bad for us as a city. That is bad for a bondholder. That is bad for us going out to the bond market. It costs taxpayers more money. So an increased assessment is not correlated with higher taxes. And how do we know that? Because we have talked to thousands of people who have seen their assessments go up, and their taxes are going to actually go down. Just because you're growing the pie. So it's basic math. So I think that we've been able to explain that to a lot of folks, and they say, oh, wait a minute, my taxes aren't going up. There have been people who have applied for appeals, and they've withdrawn their appeals because they see that in actuality their taxes aren't going up. And there have been people who are happy now that they are actually going to experience generational wealth for the first time because they lived in redline neighborhoods. They buy their house for $50,000, and for 10 and 20 years, they see no property increase. So when they want to pass that on to their kids or grandkids, there's nothing for them to pass on because they don't see the increase on their balance sheet. So that's the point I think we have to make about assessments. There's a lot of education. I think it's very easy to confuse people about it.
Some people are paying more. You're saying not everybody.
Not everybody.
It'd be wrong to say that everybody's paying more.
Right. It's definitely wrong to say that everybody's paying more. And then when you look at the deductions, a lot of people will be paying less. And also, my proposal, not getting ahead of my budget proposal, we will be, for the third year in a row, not putting in a tax increase and also cutting the tax rate.
I want to ask you about kind of the idea of a prosperity mindset. In your State of the City, you urge people to think about this prosperity mindset, to think about generational wealth, as you just mentioned. And I've listened to experts in the field of housing say that, you know, essentially you have to kind of make a choice. Housing can be an investment that should significantly increase in value over time, or housing can be truly affordable and abundant, but it's hard to do both. And the city of Austin, Texas, in the last couple of years has responded to their own crisis of rising home prices, some of the highest rising prices in the country. They built dramatically more housing. And as a result, they've basically eliminated the price increases. Now, some people have complained and they said, wait a second, my value's not going up anymore.
Right.
But a lot of people are saying, well, I can finally afford something now. And their officials are like, well, what did you want us to do here?
Right,
you don't want prices to go up, so we built a lot more.
Right.
So do we need to build a lot more housing? And do you see that as an either or choice? The housing can be an investment.
Yeah,
you don't view it as
no. I think it's a good question. But no, you first off, you have to build more housing, because first off, owning a home to me is like going to college. You may not want to go, but you should have the opportunity to. So we need to make sure that we create the opportunity. And you know why we need to create the opportunity? Because what's the and I'm going to test you. What's the black white home ownership gap in the city of Rochester?
By percentage?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably
40%.
Pretty large, yeah.
Huge 40%. 40% gap.
Yeah.
We need to increase the home ownership rate in Rochester, because one of the ways in which you build generational wealth is through home ownership. Period. Now, not everyone is going to want to own a home, and that's fine. And that's why Rochester has been the leader in the state, and I said this last night, of building affordable housing for people who might want to rent and then maybe transition to owning a home. So I think that you have to build more housing. It's why we're doing this with our Buy the Block program. And I think you want to make sure Rochester's always been a pretty stable market with home prices for the most part, right? Across the country in the last 2 to 3 years, you saw this increase. But I think that Austin is doing the right thing by building more housing. The governor is doing this. This is what's holding up the state budget right now, right? How you are able to build more affordable housing units and how you're able to do that. So do we need to build more units? Absolutely, because that keeps prices stable. That keeps more of the supply. There's a huge demand for it, and we're seeing it because we have, in downtown Rochester alone, over 10,000 people living there. And if you look at some of the projects that we have going on right now in terms of the affordable housing space, but also just in the housing space, there's market for it. 164 Center City Courtyard, right? 123 at Canal Commons, 128 at the old Hickey Freeman on North Clinton, 76 at Alta Vista, repurposing the Edwards Building for 114 units of affordable housing units. So I kind of share that Austin belief that you do need to make housing as abundant as possible, because we know that there is a demand for it. Affordable housing, too many people pay 30%. 30% or more of your income means that you are rent burdened, right? So you have to do that. But you also can't talk about housing without having a conversation about economic development and economic empowerment. Because if a person is in a situation where they want to make more money or get more skills, this is why I have invested millions in workforce development, because all of this is connected, right? All of this is connected. And, you know, we said at the city, people weren't building houses in the city, so we took the lead. And we built 26 houses over in the Northeast near Thomas Street and Weger Street, and we're building 30 more in the Bull's Head neighborhood. Now, we can't do that alone, and this is why the partnerships that we want to forge with the financial institutions and RHA and Habitat for Humanity is important. So I'm going to be known as the guy that's building this stuff. So you can have both. Because guess what, Evan? Even if you get a brand new house and that house is worth $150,000 and it goes up in value over a 10-year period and maybe it's $180,000, that's still $180,000 that's going to contribute to your net worth, even if it doesn't go back, even if it doesn't go up in value. So you can have both. We will have both. And we're working to make sure we have both.
So just some data and a credit to my colleague Gino Finelli. According to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, fair market rate for a one-bedroom apartment in Rochester has risen 35% since 2020, went from $775 on average to $1,050 on average. And some other data, you touted a total of 605 new affordable units currently under development in the city. And you said the city has developed 1,700 affordable units citywide since 2022. So two separate questions on that. That number of 1050 per one-bedroom apartment in Rochester, do you view that as a problem? And the second part is, when you describe affordable, what do you mean for the population here? What is affordable housing?
Well, I think you know, the median AMI income, but you also have to take into factor the city, right? Because we have individuals who are making less dollars, right? So how can you make sure that you tailor homes that are there, because we also have had probably 689 units that were for very low-income residents. So you have to have a broad cross-section of dollars available to folks. But I think the other thing that is very, very critical and important is that this is why you need more units, because when you have more units, you are able to have people have the opportunity to get into these places, so that way you will see the prices start to fall. And that is
supply and demand, right?
Supply and demand. That is the genesis. That is why in New York City, they would kill for an apartment for $1,050, because they just don't have the supply that we have that we have upstate. But we always have to remember that Rochester is, you know, again, we're home to five of the poorest zip codes in New York State. So whenever you talk about housing, you also have to talk about our poverty rate and what we can do to continue to try to change that.
All right, looking at crime, again, citing my colleague Gino Finelli, he notes that last year the city saw 288 shootings, 59 homicides, compared to 419 shootings and 85, respectively, in 2021. So you came into office at a peak in violence and a really, really hard time. Crime across the country, as I've mentioned, is down significantly since 2021. Murders in this country are now happening at a lower rate than they did 5 years ago. Rochester's number of homicides in 2023 is still roughly double the number we had from 10 years ago. So, as you said at the outset of this program, you know, you're not going to tolerate five. You're not going to tolerate three, because you still got to talk to three families, five families who are going to be grieving forever. And I get that. But I do want to ask you if you feel like where we are in 2023 is a trend that is likely to continue to cut in half in 24, 5, 6. Is that likely?
That's the goal. The goal is to continue to bring these numbers down. Obviously, we'd love to be where we were pre-pandemic levels, even lower. But we have to continue to keep working at it. I think that we will. Some of it's hearts and minds. One of the things that does concern me, though, is the number of illegal guns that we continue to confiscate. There are too many people walking around with firearms. It is almost a daily occurrence, and we've probably confiscated two guns a day on average last year. So that is a major concern that we have. That is not the only issue, because you also have to look at providing opportunity to make people not want to think about picking up a firearm. And that's why conflict resolution is important. This is why the more than 10,000 hours that our Pathways to Peace street outreach workers provided is critical. It's why I tout our person in crisis team and all the work that they're doing. Why we have, for the first time ever in the history of Rochester, have social workers embedded not only at our libraries, but also in our centers. All these things are important to make sure that we continue to see this downward trend in crime. But I will tell you that it is hard. It is hard work. It is just not something that you can tweet about. It is not just something that you can Facebook about. It is not just not something that you can get on the radio or stand on a corner and say that we are going to end crime. You have to work at it. It's partnerships. We have unprecedented partnerships, not only at the state, federal, and local level. We are the only municipality that has a 24/7 ATF agent on call to deal specifically with guns. We have we saw the largest increase in the state because of our advocacy, because of my advocacy in the gun-involved violence elimination programs, which is about stopping gun violence before it happens. We now look at gun crimes the same way we look at someone being shot, the same way we look at homicide. So these are all innovative things that we've had to do because we saw such a large increase in violence, right? And, you know, getting back to and I don't even want to say what's normal. No violence should be normal. As I said, it should not be normalized. Violence and destruction cannot be normalized. But for too many people, it's a normal occurrence. They just say, oh, there's another one. That's just the way it is. But I reject that notion. I reject the notion that one homicide is enough or two. Now, obviously, you have targets and you have numbers that you want to hit because you have to be realistic. But our goal is to try to get to, you know, pre-pandemic levels. And I'd love to get to where we were 30 years ago. Well, where this was not a normal occurrence. Too many. I, on my desk at City Hall, I have my box, and I have too many victims of homicides, of families that I have talked to, sitting on my box. And you know who they call? They call me. They call the mayor's office. Not because they're upset or anything, but they just don't know who else to call. And they want to tell me about their child and what happened to them and why they're feeling, you know, at a loss. You know, my first day, my first Sunday in office, Julius Greer, 14-year-old, was shot and killed. Think about that. I mean, you know, there's too many stories like that around the country, and this is why people have to see violence, not just in the numbers. So I give the numbers, but I also see it through the people. So even if we only had one homicide, if Julius was the only one homicide we had in 2022, it still would have been a tragedy. It still would have been a tragedy. And we have to reframe to get people to understand that we can't tolerate violence. We can't have it normalized. And I think that we can't just say it. We also have to put things behind it. And I think that that's what we've been doing with our program.
You've talked about making sure that we get police hirings up. How is the city of Rochester doing with hiring the police that you want to have?
Well, one of the things we did, we're trying to get two police recruit classes, but we are down about 90 plus, almost close to 100 officers.
Still,
it has been very difficult. But that's just one part of the equation, because I want you to understand when I talk about our violence reduction strategy, it's three-pronged. It's prevention, intervention, and suppression. But also, I also talked about focused redemption as well. That's the fourth subcategory we talked about last night. So we want to make sure that we have officers on the street. We want to make sure that we are supporting violence prevention programs. And then we also want to see how we can continue to replicate programs like our Advanced Peace Program, which I mentioned last night, that was targeted just to the 10th Ward. We saw a spike in homicides that happened there. But as a result of that program, we saw a reduction of 50% in homicides.
What was happening in the 10th Ward that brought those homicides down? What did the program entail?
So the Advanced Peace Program is a program that targets individuals that may have the propensity to have been victims of violence or go and perpetrate violence. We then wrap our arms around those people with people who we call neighborhood change agents, who works with the fellows that are in that program to help them get driver's licenses, to help them work with anger management, to help them work with social, emotional issues and any other things that they might have, to try to direct them on a different path. And that is what drove down those numbers. One person at a time, one gun at a time.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of resources.
It's a lot of resources, a lot of work. But guess what? It costs a lot less than putting somebody in Attica. Because you know how much it costs to put somebody in prison, right? And we know how much we've quantified this. You can have someone from RIT on your show that can quantify the lost potential of someone who is sitting in Mount Hope Cemetery or cremated in an urn somewhere. And by the time the medical examiner gets there and puts the toe tag on the person when they're laying there after being shot and having their head blown off, that's too late. So we are saying, how can we get involved earlier on and do the preventative piece. So prevention is just as important as intervention and suppression. They all go together, and that's been our consistent strategy over the last 2 years and 4 months.
I certainly take the point that hiring police is not the be-all, end-all. It's a component of it. Is there a reason to think that you will be able to get those numbers filled or more filled than they are right now?
Well, I think we will. I mean, I think we have two recruit classes, so we'll come close. But one of the things we can't control is retirements. You get 20 years, and after 20 years, you can say, thank you very much, I'm out of here, right? So you have the retirements, and then you have folks coming in. But I think that we'll be able to do that.
Okay, and Mayor, we've heard members of law enforcement. We're going to have a conversation soon on this program with Sheriff Todd Baxter and the public defender of Monroe County, Julie Sianca, talking about their very different views on judicial discretion, things like bail reform. Do you see the courts as not having enough discretion to hold people who they're concerned about committing violence?
I'm going to be very careful and not start going after judges because I promised them I would not do that. But I will say that I think that we need to make sure that we are following the letter of the law. I've been very vocal last year where there were individuals that I believed, and in many instances I was right, should not have been released, and they were. And I'll leave it at that because—
But they didn't have to be released based on the law?
That's correct.
Even with reforms?
That's correct. That is correct.
Okay.
And I think that that's— so you might want to get some experts on the show to talk to you about that. But again, as I've learned, I am a bridge builder, and I want to respect the independent judiciary and the independent legislature. But I want to be clear that, yes, there have been individuals that have been back out on the streets that should not have been, period. Period.
We're talking to Rochester Mayor Malik Evans. Got a couple of emails this hour already on the subject of car thefts. Back in November, Kia held upgrade clinics across the country for consumers to get the latest anti-theft software. And even then, the number of cities as part of litigation against Kia and Hyundai have grown. Syracuse joined recently. So let me just start by asking, are you concerned we're going to see another wave of Kia and Hyundai thefts in Rochester this year?
I hope not. I mean, these numbers have started to trend down, but it really is just, it was an absolutely, and I think I talked about that on your show. I've been on here so many times, I can't remember, but it's ridiculous, okay? Kia and Hyundai, okay? If we were saying Cadillac and Lexus, there's no way that this would have been happening. Kia and Hyundai's are mainly owned by working people, okay? And that switch, that device that they were supposed to have in there is something that I had in my car when I was driving around in the 1990s, okay? And they neglected to put those things in there. Now, again, I'm not excusing the responsibility of the knuckleheads that are going around joyriding, taking people's cars for no reason. I mean, it's not even like they're selling them for parts. They're just taking them, driving them around, and then having fun with them, and then getting off and doing another one. But they bear responsibility in this. Because you notice what it is, Kia and Hyundai. Very rarely do you hear a Honda Accord or a Lexus ES350 or a Mercedes-Benz. It's harder to steal those cars. So young people took the opportunity that they had to be able to do that. Now, obviously, we need a lot. We saw that we had to have some consequences for that, and that's why we worked with the county to launch the JEDS program to make sure that we zeroed in on the vast majority of these young people that were doing that. Because let me say something that I said to a group of African-American men in the last 2 weeks. So last week I spoke to the Talented 10th School at number 58 school, and I spoke to the Minority Leadership Development Program at the University of Rochester. So I want to put this out to the listeners that are right here. The vast majority of the young people that live in the city of Rochester, they are doing the right thing, and they are not Kia boys and Kia girls. But if you look at social media or you look at Twitter, you would think that almost every kid in Rochester is a Kia boy or Kia girl. And the vast majority of them are not. And if you want to meet some of them that are not and are doing positive things, meet the Mayor's Youth Advisory Council or the Talented 10th at 58 School or the Minority Male Leadership Program over at the University of Rochester that brings in high school kids. So this car theft issue upsets me because it's painted this picture of now people thinking that every time they see a young black male, they think it's a Kia boy. You know, there was something, I'm not on social media regularly, where someone said they thought this kid, it was a kid at the Lilac Festival, and they looked and they said, oh, look at this Kia boy. Turns out the kid was an honor student. So we need to change the narrative about, unfortunately, what this small segment of population has done is they've really painted a brush, particularly of African-American men, to put into the psyche of people that now whenever people see an African-American man, for not all, but many, they see a Kia boy, which is sad and unfortunate. But we have to make sure, and I hope that we will get some compensation for the dollars that it has cost.
That lawsuit's still ongoing?
Oh, it sure is, and we're not getting out of it. I don't care how many clinics they do in Rochester where they think that they can come after the fact. You know, it's almost like you start the fire, and then you come with your fire hose and say, oh, I'm here to put out the fire. Well, you're a little late. I'm glad you're here to put out the fire. But you know what? You had the opportunity to not light the match in the first
place. And you're still liable.
Yeah, that's right. You lit the match in the first place, and they lit the match.
But would you be surprised if the numbers were as high this year as they were last year in car thefts?
I would be surprised because I think a lot of people have gotten the have gotten the fix, and I think that we've done a good job in terms of zeroing in on the offenders that are really doing that. You'll always have car thefts, but the numbers won't be as high as they were last year.
The Rochester bid recently failed, or at least it seems to be halted for now. And I wonder, as mayor of Rochester, what you make of the end of that bid for a bid.
Yeah, well, I think the bid formation committee will have to reconvene and figure out how they still can do what they want to do in terms of making a vibrant downtown. I think the anti-bid folks and the pro-bid folks were surprised when it ended. But I think from my perspective, one of the things that I'm going to do at City Hall is to make sure that I continue to bring economic development and fun, regardless of what happens. You know, one of the things we did this year is we are encouraging more festivals. We are doing more in-kind support for festivals and events, and that's important for us to be able to do that. And you know, we're proud of the $151 million in total investments downtown that we've seen in companies like Sun Density. We know that Sibley Square has 1 million square feet that is almost totally filled. So we believe that from a city perspective that we will continue to work hard to build a vibrant downtown for the first time in decades. When was the last time a Fortune 500 company was moving downtown? Can you remember? I don't even know if you're from here. You probably can't remember.
I've been here for 21 years. I do not remember.
Hasn't happened in 21 years, my brother. But June 4th, Constellation Brands is moving downtown. So I'm going to continue to work to push for a revitalized downtown. We are now a live, work, play environment for the first time in, 30 years, 50 years, first time in history. We now have more than 10,000 people living downtown. And in addition to those 10,000, there's, five or six more housing developments that are coming up downtown. So people are going to want things to do. And then I'm hoping that once we keep getting this critical mass, maybe we'll get a grocery store or a movie theater or a Target or something. Downtown that will continue to anchor all of these people that are coming down here because they're going to want to see it, and if the businesses that are going to be down here, they're going to want to have some fun. So we have lots of ideas on that that we will continue to talk about. But our focus on the river and our focus on the water has been a major economic development tool for us. We have turned our back away from the water and river for years, and now we're reversing that, right? With the first ever High Falls State Park.
We talked about it yesterday on this program.
High Falls State Park. By the way, I asked for that the second month on the job. We got it. I started having conversations when I was mayor-elect. I never thought we would get it, but we did. The $100 million interloop. These are all things that are going to contribute to the vibrancy of downtown and other neighborhoods. And that's why it's important that we stay focused on those things.
Did you want to see a bid, Mayor?
I would have liked to. I would have liked to, but I think that in order for it to work, you have to have everyone on the community. You have to have broad-based community involvement. And if it just creates a big food fight, then you spend all your time fighting and not getting anything done. And as mayor, my job always is to try to bring people together, even people that don't want to be brought together. But we have a bid at High Falls. Canandaigua has a bid, right?
Well, a lot of
Batavia
cities have a bid. Yeah.
Has a bid.
Yeah.
Cleveland has a bid. Baltimore has a bid. Washington, D.C. has a bid. So the question is how can you still have vibrancy in downtown without all the food fights? And we love food fights in the city. We just love it. I think this has got to be one of the, we're one of those cities where we say we want to collaborate and work together, but it's always a challenge to be able to do that. But we have to keep doing that if we're going to see progress.
I'm going to try to squeeze in some listener questions. And I had an email that was a general question, and I'm going to interpret it the way I think the listener intended to ask about vacant city buildings. I'm going to turn this in the office direction because when the pandemic hit, of course, there was a lot of people who didn't go back to work. High Falls Garage next to us has never been quite as full as it was pre-pandemic. It's much more full now. It is an issue in just about every major city. What happens with office space when more people want to work remotely, et cetera? I don't know what your numbers are here now. I know that the county's been involved, the city's been involved. Are you concerned? Is it a crisis, a concern about office space, unused buildings, or do you think that the city has got that under control?
I think that it's always a challenge, but you know what? I see opportunity because Rochester, we are so ahead of cities like Washington, D.C. and other places that have seen these vacant office buildings, because guess what we do? We turn it into housing. And that's what we're doing. And that's what we made clear. The old city hall, turn it into housing, right? Because there's a demand for housing, and then you still can have housing on the top, and then you can have commercial space on the bottom. Case in point, Innovation Square. Case in point, Sibley Square. Case in point, what we're going to be doing at Main and Clinton. Case in point, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So while if I was some other cities that always relied on office space, I would be very concerned. But I think we have the opportunity to repurpose. And what I would like to see is one of the things we don't have a lot downtown is ownership. Why can't we have co-ops in Rochester? Not everybody needs to have a single family home. Is there a way to incentivize and get opportunities to turn office space into home ownership space where you have co-ops? Now, don't get me wrong. Me, I don't like living next to a lot of people, and I'm, you know, I don't want people telling me what color I can paint my kitchen and all the other stuff. For some people, they're okay with that. So a lot of this unused office space that not just in Rochester but in cities across the country, I think are prime opportunities for housing. Luckily, we've been doing that, and you see that in a lot of the empty office spaces that we've had downtown.
Sometimes I look up at the big spinning. What, it used to be a restaurant up there before I got here?
Yeah.
What's up there?
Changing the scenes. There's some companies that are within the building.
It's commercial space.
Commercial space. I don't know if they're using the top. I don't know what they're using the top.
I know. I feel like it's just so.
But we'd love to get it spinning again. I'd like to have an apartment up there. That'd be a heck of an apartment.
That would be. Is there a building in the city that you look at and say, that's a problem for us? I can't believe this is vacant. That's one that's high on the list that we want to see repurposed.
Yeah, we saw it. It was Main and Clinton, which I called an abomination. And now there's site control and they're already working on it, right? And now it's a part of Main Street Commons. It's a part of all of those things that we'll be doing downtown. Home leasing is going to have the housing on the corner with commercial space on the bottom. So that building was my biggest problem in the city, and it was my biggest problem because it was your welcome to Rochester. And during the transition, I invited someone to take a walk through in Rochester, and they pointed to that building and said, "What the hell is that?" But now you'll see progress there. If you go on Main and Clinton right now, you'll see wood things up there because they're working inside of it. Soon you will see, I'm sorry, we got to do it for a little bit. You'll see the street shut down with one lane so they can start working on this project. And then next to that, you'll see the commons that is going to be open there. And you'll see commercial space that'll still be there. The Social Security Administration will still stay there. The brown facade of where that old Family Dollar will come down, and that will become a boutique hotel. So that building was prime for development, and I think that now we're starting to see progress there. But that there's a couple of other buildings that drive me crazy, but that was one that really got under my skin more than anything else.
The city GBI program launched in October, and our colleagues have reported that the city has funded 350 of the participants in this program through $2.2 million in federal COVID relief dollars. The city has also now provided demographics on who is enrolled in this program. The most common recipient is a Black woman living on the city's north side. A lot of the recipients in the Northeast and the Northwest. The median age of those receiving GBI funds is 40, and many are also working and they're receiving SNAP benefits. So when you look at this program, again, it's not UBI, universal basic income, as the mayor explained to me last time he was on talking about this, is universal. It's for everybody. GBI is, general basic?
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed. Yeah, thank guaranteed. You. It's targeted. And it's targeted because the city is not the federal government. The city doesn't have an unlimited tap that could be universal. But you said that in this case, you're going to take those $2.2 million in COVID relief funds. You're going to see what a year of this looks like for 350, maybe just a few more than that, participants. And then what? Because we're going to be there in 6 months or so, and you know, then it will stop, and those folks will kind of go back to what their life was like before that $500 a month. So is it $500 a month, Mayor? Is that
$500
correct?
A month for 12 months.
Okay. So what happens after these 12 months, and what could the result be?
Well, I think hopefully the result is that we've been, because almost every one of these folks have gone through counseling, they've been partnered with other organizations to see if there's a way for them to then sustain those dollars. Did they switch jobs? Did they do something different? So I think our friends at the University of Notre Dame Financial Lab will help us with in terms of data. But one of the things I'm hoping for and encouraging is that we will have some philanthropists and nonprofit organizations to come in and possibly, if the data shows that this works, to replicate this, right? Because this can't just be a government program because we don't have unlimited resources, as you know. But how can we be a partner in it going forward? I mean, we were very, very involved. I mean, I spent my whole first year, all of 2022, was planning this program. A lot of staff time, a lot of work. So now that we got this up and running, I think that there may be organizations that might be interested in continuing this program, and I hope that they can be able to do it. I mean, there was this whole argument where, hey, you're just giving people money and they're not doing anything. Not true. They use it to pay down debt. They use it to buy a car. They use it to save for a home. They use it to do a lot of things. And we know that this works. We know that people are always interested in changing their trajectory. You know, we have the Office of Financial Empowerment, which I launched 2 years ago. And in that Office of Financial Empowerment, some of those folks were GBI clients, GBI recipients. And in the last, like, couple of years, last 2 years, they saw something like 775 clients help people pay down more than $1.45 million in debt, help people save hundreds of thousands of dollars. So for anybody that says that GBI was some type of giveaway, I say it is not. It was a way to help people move up the economic ladder. And secondly, the first time you had bipartisan agreement in Congress this year, you know what it was around? The child tax credit. And we're still waiting for to see if they're going to take up legislation on that. If we did that for every American, child tax credit, where people got a dollar amount every month related to if you had children, and we can do other things, but if we just did that, we would lift, we could cut childhood poverty in half. And that's a federal government program that we can have. I mentioned that before on the show. So we know how to do a lot of this stuff. A lot of it, you just have to have the political will. And we have to be interested in finding solutions to problems and not, you know, just talking about the problem. So we talk about poverty, but we know that we talk about childhood poverty a lot. Well, there's a solution right there. That's a simple one. We should be able to do that in short order. The federal government just has both houses of Congress just has to pass it, and then the president just has to sign it.
One more question for me, and then I'll turn it over to our listeners. And I know you're not on the school board anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But I know you care. And Dr. Carmine Peluso leaving the city of Rochester came as a shock to a lot of people. Is that anything that you feel that you need to weigh in on? Have you been in touch, or are you saying, look, that's not under my purview?
What I've said is, and I've said this to the school board, I've said this to anybody, I want to help wherever I can, because we need a strong school system. I'm very sad to see Dr. Peluso leave. We had a great relationship with him. We were working with the school district, as a matter of fact, on my new childhood savings account, which we're launching this year, where every kindergartner entering kindergarten this year will get a savings account. And we're going to rely on the school district to help us administer that program with a lot of data. And I was happy that I had a superintendent that knew exactly what I was trying to do and bought into it and brought his team to the table. So we have a lot of different projects. I mean, we have, we have 9 Pathways to Peace workers in our schools to help with conflict resolution and all of those things. So, you know, we partner a lot. A lot of our schools, a lot of our recreation centers are tied to city schools. So we have a vested interest in seeing that the city schools do well. And I think it's sad that we're losing a superintendent that we really had a decent relationship with at City Hall. We don't always agree, as you know.
Sure.
We have our challenges with the school district, but it's important to have somebody that you can work with.
Or continuity, right? I mean, who do you fault for his departure?
I don't know. I'm just not in it.
You don't concern yourself.
Yeah,
with
I'm not. I'm okay. Not in it. I don't even pretend to know all of the details and inside
Fair
baseball.
Enough.
I got so many of my own problems to deal with over at City Hall, but I do know that. We care about who's going to be coming there, and more importantly, that they have a good relationship with us.
Can you just take a minute to describe this program where kids starting in kindergarten get a savings account? Where does the money come from? When would they be able to access it? What is the plan for
that? So the idea is it's a children's savings account program for each child who enters kindergarten next year by providing a seed deposit and then scheduled investments and bonus deposits. A lot of it comes from philanthropy. We've already gotten a grant for the seed money that will be provided to the students that will get there. And then we will raise the rest of the money for people to make regular deposits, but families will also be able to put money in as they see fit. But the money will belong to that child and it will belong to them and they can carry it until they're 18 years old. And they can use it for college, they can use it for whatever it is they want to do. But it gets into this growth mindset this prosperity mindset that I want us to embrace in the city. Other cities have done this. We're modeling it after St. Paul, Minnesota, who has done this. And this is out of my Office of Financial Empowerment that I launched. And my Office of Financial Empowerment is funded by the kindness of strangers. We put in grants. We are regularly looking for dollars, and it's all
private
about prosperity.
Private contributions
from foundations that usually cover that. So that is an important office that we have there. But just imagine somebody knowing that they may have their own savings account with their mom and dad, but to know that there's a savings account that they have that belongs to them, that they control, and as they grow old, they'll have dollars that they can have. Because for so many people, they never had a savings account. They had to live paycheck to paycheck, or they didn't have the opportunity to do that. But this gives people an opportunity to understand the importance of savings, which is a major problem in America. During the pandemic, savings rates went through the roof. Now we're back to where we were pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. Debt rates fell significantly during the pandemic. Now they're back up to where they were before. But I also hope this gives us an opportunity to sneak financial literacy into the schools as well. I believe that every school, before you could graduate, you should have to And I hope the Board of Regents pushes this one day. You should be required to take financial literacy courses because the financial health of America is sick.
All right, let me get Shirley in Rochester on the phone. Hi, Shirley, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. And I'm rushing because I want to catch the bagel shop before it closes at 1.
Go ahead.
So I have two quick questions. First of all, Mayor Evans, I think you're doing a good job. I love your energy. I love your ideas. I love your initiative.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work, and I'm sorry I'm not going to be in town to attend your event in May, I believe it is. Two quick questions. I am driving Uber now.
Wow.
And the streets are doing a number on my car. What are the plans for cleaning up some of the potholes and the dips and the manhole covers and everything?
Yes, yes. And Shirley, are these on city streets or also on the expressway?
Both.
Yep. So here's a little. So first off, I will say, preventative maintenance on all streets will start now because we're in the spring. You know, you can't do it in the winter. So all those places will have. And then also, please report any potholes that you see to us to 311. The ones that are on the expressway with the state, we work with the state to try to get those filled. And then here's a little thing that a lot of people don't know. If anyone's car is ever damaged on a city street, you have the right to put in a claim in the city. My legal counsel gets mad when I say that, but it's true. The city has the responsibility to actually compensate you if there is a pothole and your car is damaged as a result. If the pothole
That's wonderful to hear.
Yep. Yeah. It's true. And there's actually a form. It's even on our website. So that's important to know. But we encourage anyone that sees potholes to make sure they call 311. And we are starting now this month, and then as it gets warmer, the preventative maintenance. You know what happens in Rochester? It gets cold, it gets warm, it gets cold, it gets warm, and then what that does is it opens the holes, and that's how you see these potholes. But they drive me crazy.
Okay.
I feel you, and please let us know wherever it is that you see them.
You know I will. And then my quick last question. Do you see any movement on renaming one of the streets after Minister Franklin Florence? Is that something that you personally can help happen?
Yes, yes, absolutely, and we're working on that. We're looking at Plymouth Avenue outside of the church. We're going to name that. We've committed to naming that after Minister Franklin Florence. So that portion outside of the church, going up further on Plymouth Avenue, will be named after Minister Franklin Florence.
Thank you, Shirley. Let me squeeze in an email from Rhonda who says, can you ask the mayor if he has plans to address the amount of single-family homes bought by outside companies, LLCs, that have tenants who sell drugs, otherwise known as trap houses? Homeowners who have called their net offices to complain or file violations often find that nothing happens because the slumlords can't be reached or just ignore the violations altogether. Living next to such a property makes the homeowners who take care of their property want to leave the city and live elsewhere. Can this be fixed and addressed?
Absolutely, it can be fixed and addressed. And as I said, we're not going to tolerate that nonsense. And I'm glad that the caller asked that question. I would say, first off, make sure that you are calling 311, but also the mayor's office directly, 428 7045. 428-7045. This is something that is one of my pet peeves. One of the challenges is with these LLCs is legally, I don't think we can stop them, but what we can do is we can fine them. We can cite them. And we have had some success. There was a house on Hawley Street where I had five neighbors come up and give me hugs when I was walking on Genesee Street last week because we were able to get a house that fit the description of what this writer was talking about. It's something that we cannot tolerate in our city. And if you see houses that are being used for drug sales or landlords that aren't being responsive or places that are falling into disrepair and you're not getting an answer through your net office, which is where you should be getting the answer, or you're not getting an answer through 311, you call 428-7045 and we will make sure that we follow up on these things. We can't tolerate this in the city. This wouldn't be allowed anywhere else. It wouldn't be allowed anywhere else. And this is this prosperity mindset we have to have. We don't have to tolerate that. And we need, I don't want that caller to leave the city. I want them to stay in the city. I want them to stay and fight for the city because we need more people like them to call out these properties that are doing these nefarious things that wouldn't be tolerated anywhere else.
All right, I am going to end on a softball. Dallas says, the mayor has infectious enthusiasm. I always liked him. Is he even more on coffee?
Here, so guess what, Dallas? I started sneaking coffee when I was 7 years old. I would go downstairs and boil the coffee and drink it. And here's the thing: when I turned 25, I gave up coffee. So I haven't had a cup of coffee. I drink tea still. I haven't had a cup of coffee in close to 20 years. Can you believe it?
I cannot believe it.
That's right.
I think you're missing out. Your city has wonderful coffee shops.
Well, I go to all the coffee shops. In fact, I'm a big supporter of Joe Bean. I'm a big supporter of you pick them. You pick the coffee shop. I'm a big spot coffee. I love them all, but I just grab tea. I'm a big chai guy, so I'll grab some chai or green tea or those types of things.
But I know there's a lot happening, and I just want to say, every time you're on this program, the community benefits from hearing you and having a chance to talk at length. I appreciate it, and they do as well. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Support local journalism. It's all we got. This is why I come here. Thank you, WXXI, for being a strong local journalist for our community. Thank you.
All right, that's Mayor Malik Evans from the city of Rochester, and we've got more coming up in just a moment.